ॐ जननीं शारदां देवीं रामकृष्णं जगद्गुरुं पादपद्मे तयोः श्रित्वा प्रणमामि मुहुर्मुहुः। इन् अवर् लास्ट् क्लास् वी हव् बीन् स्टडियिङ्ग् आल् दि डैरेक्षन्स् अवर् एन्शियण्ट् स्क्रिप्चर्स् हेव् गिवन् अस् हौ टु प्रोग्रेस् इन् स्पिरिचुवल् लैफ्. Following their direction, every avatara constantly emphasizes those duties prescribed in the scriptures to be followed. And in the Karma Yoga book of Swami Vivekananda, he had selected some of these duties. We have been discussing about them. And in our last class, we have come to that particular very special duty every child owes to his or her parents. This is called Pitru Rina. Every Hindu, according to Dharma Shastra, is born with five debts: Rishi Rina, Deva Rina, Pitru Rina, Nr Rina, Bhuta Rina. So among them, parents, every incarnation of God set an example how parents have to be looked after. What is the psychology behind it? What is spiritual life? Converting one's life into spiritual vision. What is spiritual vision? Spirituality is another name for divinity. Divinity is another name for God. Spiritual life is to see God everywhere, in everything, at all times. Whatever other things we do, whether it is puja, rituals, study of scriptures, pilgrimages, prayers, worship of guru, of deities, whatever, the ultimate purpose is to see God in everything, all the time. See Brahman everywhere. This has been so pithily expressed. Asuptehe amrutehe. Kalam nayet brahma chintaya. Asuptehe, until one falls asleep. Amrutehe, until this body drops off. Kalam nayet. Nayet kalam. Time must be used. In what? Brahma chintaya. In the thought of God. Practice the presence of God. As we go on practicing all these things, our inner vision opens up, our mind gets transformed into consciousness, and whatever is done through the medium of that consciousness cannot but only experience consciousness. So slowly, the goal is to transcend these gross limitations, transform them into subtle limitations, still subtler limitation, subtlest limitation. That means, go on seeing the mola karana, the real cause, out of which everything is made. And what is everything is made up of? Only Brahman, pure consciousness. This is such a tremendous discovery, seeing parents as God, and then seeing one's guru as God, is actually not a strange process, not a miraculous process, but it is seeing things as they are. Seeing God is not an extraordinary achievement. Non-seeing God is a most extraordinary achievement. Somehow we have achieved that. We have succeeded in not seeing God, looking at God all the time. Just as a man sees a poisonous serpent in a harmless piece of rope. Now that process has to be reversed. And in every scripture, this has been emphasized, especially in Hindu scriptures. So last time, we have been discussing about Sri Ramakrishna's extraordinary devotion to his parents. His father passed away very early. But the father led such a life, both father and mother, but especially the father. He was truthful to the very core. Satyena pantha vitate devayanaha. The way to higher worlds is only paved with truth. One who doesn't observe truthfulness can never reach truth, which is God. Kshudiram never deviated. Of course, we know very little about Kshudiram, how he respected his own parents. But we can guess by looking at his character. If he was so truthful, he must have got some inspiration from somebody. And most likely, that would be from his parents. Sri Ramakrishna derived his inspiration from his father. And what about Chandramani Devi? She was an embodiment of simplicity. She never knew what is called duplicity. She never knew what is called thinking one thing in the mind and expressing it in another way. To such an extent, she had nothing to hide. One of the ways to find out whether a person is, or whether we ourselves are filled with duplicity, is we do not wish anyone to know our thoughts. Even we do not wish to know ourselves also. Self-deception has become an expert. We have become very experts in self-deception. And that is what is called mental disease. It is nothing but not recognizing, not cognizing what is the real problem, which is we are our own problem. And so the solution also, we are only the solution to our problem, which is ourselves. So, anybody who can be so simple that even at the cost of being ridiculed by other people, she is to express. And then Kshudiram said, you do not go on telling whatever is there in your mind. You do not need to deceive anybody, but you do not need to express also, because other people will never understand. First, they will consider you are mad. Then they might even take advantage of you. Such was the mother, and she could never sleep without sharing what she has. First, she would go on inquiring whether anybody has eaten, and only when she was satisfied, she would sit down to eat. These are very natural things that had come to them. Now, why am I talking about all these things? Because it is these are the duties of parents towards their children. We are talking about children's duties towards parents. But we also have to talk parents' duties towards the children. And most of the troubles, problems we are facing today, especially mental problems, is because the parents at least contribute a great deal towards the problems of the children. And such numbers are ever on increase. So, Sri Ramakrishna, even though he was a monk, and a monk, as we all know, is excluded from every type of obligation. There is, in fact, only one obligation, if at all, on part of the monks. One obligation is that they will have to strive to attain God. A sannyasi automatically is not a man of God. Some people take to sannyasa so that it becomes easier for them that one particular lifestyle is very favorable for the realization of God. That's why sannyasins are divided into vividisha sannyasins and vidvat sannyasins. Vividisha means the desire to realize God. Vidvat means they have realized vividisha sannyasins by going through hard austerities, sadhana, spiritual sadhana, have realized God. And then they become shining examples like Ramana Maharshi, etc. Not to speak of the direct disciples of Sri Ramakrishna. They are called vidvat sannyasins. But they also have a duty. It is not for the purvashrama people. But what is their duty? Adhyayana and adhyapana. They will have to study scriptures and they will have to teach. Why should they study? Study, a realized soul need not study anything. But then it is imposed upon him, that is his duty. And how do we understand it? As a striving sannyasin, it is absolutely necessary to study scriptures for two reasons. One reason is so that it will be helpful in their own sadhana. But another important reason is these striving sannyasins, their mind, when it is completely occupied with the scriptural study, reasoning, meditating, deeply pondering, will keep them completely away from lower consciousness, lower thoughts, objects of temptations, etc. And that's why my Gurudev Yatishand used to say, cultivate your intellect. Will it give God realization? Not necessarily. But what does it give? Protection from temptations of the world. And if a sannyasin doesn't study, there is another reason, important reason. He has to explain. Supposing the person has not studied, but he is striving, or he has become a realized soul. And naturally, people will be gravitated towards them. There is an invisible law that when, as soon as a person realizes God or becomes perfect in any field of life, and students, the sadhaka, seekers of that particular field, whether it is music, science, poetry, sculpture, anything, you name it, of course spirituality, they gravitate. That's why as soon as Sri Ramakrishna used to succeed in any particular sadhana, sadhakas, aspirants, treading that particular path used to be attracted, unbeknown to themselves, to Dakshineshwar. Why? Because that is the law God implements. You are seeking me and you are treading this path, and the, here is a person who knows everything about that path. He just now he became a Siddha, a perfect in that path. So they used to come like that. We can even say his own Guru Totapuri came more to learn than to give, teach. So that is the reason adhyayana and adhyapana duties are there. Everybody in this world has their own duties. And that is how God protects dharma, establishes dharma, propagates dharma. All is a travel towards God himself. So we have been seeing, even though Sri Ramakrishna was a sannyasi par excellence. In fact, many people, millions, worship him as an incarnation of God. But we do not insist, we are not fanatical. Everybody should accept Sri Ramakrishna as an incarnation of God. Even if you take him as a great saint, that's more than sufficient. From his life, we can learn very, very many lessons. So that's what we are trying to do through this study of the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna. So here we are, Sri Ramakrishna, I already told how he used to go every day, inquire after his mother, after making prostrations. A sannyasi is free from all these prostrations. I sometimes jokingly tell people, especially elderly people, who are not, whose body has become a little more non-cooperative, stiff. So you should progress in devotion. Until now, you are having bending devotion. And now you must progress into unbending devotion. And I also joke, after 60 you are tax-free. You don't need to show all these external things, but inside you must have that reverence. Whether a person deserves or not, we must show respect, because even the most wicked person, in him also, the Divine Mother vibrates. It is only the Divine Mother actually who is playing in the form of that evil. So this is not directly related to our discussion in a way. But why did Divine Mother create evil people? So that people can distinguish what is evil and what is good and establish themselves as good people. If there are no temptations, believe me, there would be no saints. If there are no evil people, we will not know who is a good person. So that is one of, this is how the world play. Leela, Brahmanda, Leela is going on since beginningless time. Okay, coming back, Ramakrishna used to prostrate, and I also mentioned, throughout her life, he served her. And after her passing away, he wanted to offer Shraddhanjali, Shraddha. He could not do it, he cannot do it as a sannyasin. But at least he wanted to offer water. Water also slipped away from his fingers. That is what he was told, Galita Hasta. So I want to show how in the past every saint practically, whether we know about them or not, had observed this and taught it also to others. Swami Vivekananda, you know, that was a big family, and Swamiji was specially born as one of the Saptarshis, seven rishis. One of them was brought down by Sri Ramakrishna as a helper in the establishment of Dharma. Even today, we do not have any capacity to measure what Swami Vivekananda contributed. He used to sometimes express about himself and said, had there been another Vivekananda, he would have known what understood what this Vivekananda had done. Such a great soul, he had to renounce the world at a very early age, especially under very straitened circumstances. Narendranath's father had passed away, and in those days, just you imagine, every month 1,000 rupees used to be spent for family expenses. Not that it was expensive time. There was in those days, 5 to 7 rupees was more than adequate for most of the households. In those days, Vishwanath Datta's family used to spend nearly 1,000 rupees. All of a sudden, his father passed away, income had stopped, relatives, all of them turned deadly enemies. They started taking away whatever they could. They wanted, in fact, to throw away the family of Vishwanath Datta, Bhuvaneshwari Devi and others. Those were the times when an ordinary young man, he would strive his best to secure some job. The funny thing was, I will tell you, share with you some of these funny things. Swami Vivekananda, that word comes very often through my mouth. Narendranath, he understood the family situation, and many days, so that his portion of the food can be eaten by others, he used to tell a lie. I have been invited by my rich friends, and then sometimes he would come back completely starving. Remember, a young man who used to razzil and with very good appetite, extremely good appetite, he used to come back. And lest the others should come to know he had not in fact eaten anything, he would chew a betel leaf. As this betel leaf is chewed usually after a feast. So his family people think he has eaten nicely, so naturally they will not feel guilty. That was the condition. And then the people who would have been glad to fall at his father's feet now closed all their doors towards this family, especially Narendranath. And then somehow, for a short time, he secured a job as a school teacher in one of the schools of Ishwar Chandra Vidyasagar. And look at the fun. The other teachers had become jealous of him. Somehow, instinctively, they understood we are far inferior to him. Instead of acknowledging, instead of coming and learning from him, they turned as one enemy against him. And then they incited the children that this new teacher has no capacity to teach. The man who was very shortly, in another 2-3 years, was to become one of the Jagadgurus, greatest teachers of the world, not only in spirituality but in every conceivable subject. And these boys have complained to a founder of that school, Vidyasagar, and Vidyasagar was constrained to dismiss him. So such were the conditions, and yet he had to leave because that was his mission. He understood instinctively, albeit unconsciously, that I have a mission to fulfill. So he became a monk, and his youngest brother, Bhupendranath Datta, accuses him of deserting them at the most needed times in his book. It's very interesting. Swami Vivekananda was considered as the greatest holy person India had produced. But his youngest brother turned a communist, and he wrote, of course, very nice book, but very critical of Swami Vivekananda, that is, the patriot prophet Swami Vivekananda, and it's a very interesting study. So he accuses, this man, my eldest brother, ran away instead of taking responsibility and looking all after all of us because we were very young. He had deserted the family. This is completely baseless accusation, because throughout his life, Swami Vivekananda loved his mother so much that he looked after her to the best of his ability, and this hidden story few people know. Swami Vivekananda secretly writes to his disciples, the Raja of Khetri, Ajit Singh, that Your Majesty, you are coming from the Rajasthan kings. I have only one regret in life. When I had to support my mother, then I had to come away for reasons I cannot explain to you. But I beg you that you see that you send at least 100 rupees so long as she is alive. My mother had suffered enough. Not on one occasion, but on innumerable occasions, Swami Vivekananda tells it. This is the story of Swami Vivekananda, the emperor of Advaita, who used to say this world is nothing. But on a practical side, such a tremendous, immeasurable love for his mother. Had his father been there, he would have been all right. There was a funny incident when his father was alive. Narendranath was perceptive enough to know his father was wasting money on several of his useless and poisonous relatives. And one day, this young Narendranath confronted his father and said, "What have you left for us? Because you are a spendthrift and you are spending everything." And then the answer came. The father, instead of answering, took the young Narendranath by his hand, led him in front of a huge mirror, made him stand in front of the mirror and said, "This is what I am leaving you. That means you, the man, I have trained you, I have taught you, I have myself lived the life. And if I have learnt anything, that your manliness, that is what the most invaluable treasure, the character of a person, that's what I am leaving to you." That's what he meant. Now I will narrate another incident. Swami Akhandanandaji, he was wandering in North India. He happened to live for some time somewhere in North India in the house of a Ayurvedic Kaviraj Pandit. And I do not know how it happened. There, the old mother and father are treated worse than servants. And Swami Akhandanandaji was shocked. He called these shops and then he said, "Don't you know whatever Dharma Shastras teach? One's parents must be looked upon as none other than God Himself." And then as a result, that Ayurvedic doctor had become completely changed. And then from next morning, he used to first thing after getting up, he will bow down to his mother, place 1 rupee in her hand, and then any wants are there, he would fulfill. And his family strangely never liked it. And the root cause of all this was Swami Akhandananda. Therefore, they wanted to do away with him, to kill him. That was a very interesting incident in the life of Swami Akhandananda. But I will narrate, share with you another one. How deeply, even in the remotest villages, Hindus were influenced by these teachings of the scriptures. Of course, most people were illiterate, never studied the scriptures. But through the stories they hear, through Harikathas, through dramas, and through narratives by village pandits, etc., of Mahabharata, of Ramayana, we know Rama went to the forest just to see that his father would not be called a liar, because he gave these boons to his stepmother Kaikeyi for the sake of fulfilling. Of course, we know Dasharatha had passed away, and the life of Rama's mother was very miserable, but then he had to do the dharma. So Akhandanandaji, he was wandering, and once he was wandering in Himalayas, and there he came across a cave, and that was another story. He went to a village, and there was a poor lady, perhaps a widow, and she had several children, and he took shelter at night there. And the lady was very pious lady. She gave him food, showed him a corner of the house, and then he went to bed. Next morning, he was still tired. He was supposed to spend only one night there and then depart from there, but his body was not in a state to travel. So he asked, "Mother, I want to spend one more day here. Will you give me permission?" She said, "Yes, my son, you stay as many days as you want. We are all working people, so early morning we prepare food, we eat something, here is your portion of the breakfast, and we leave some food for noon also, and when you are hungry, you eat it." So then he asked her, "I am a stranger, do you trust me? How do you know that I am not going to bundle all your utensils, etc., and run away?" And the reply is a most wonderful reply. She said, "My son, we have been taught from the very beginning that every sadhu is to be looked after as a god, as if God himself has come in the form of the atidhi, not to speak of ordinary atidhi, but a monk, a sannyasi. So, we have no reason to, we will not disbelieve, we will not lose our faith, we will not suspect." And then she narrated what happened a few months earlier. Another sadhu came exactly like that, requested to be allowed to stay for a few days. And by the time these people came back, he bundled whatever he could lay his hands upon and disappeared. So this incident happened after that fake sadhu had stolen everything. She said that it is not our duty to look after who is fake and who is real. We don't know, but we will do our dharma. If a sannyasi doesn't do his dharma, well, God will deal with them. It's not none of our business. Such wonderful experiences Swami Akhandananda had all the time. So that shows how much whatever duties we have been prescribed by the scriptures is for our own good, and without discharging them, we will never be able to progress in spiritual life. Then, of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we know he was one of the greatest devotees of God. Many consider him as a incarnation of love, incarnation of God. Sri Ramakrishna used to consider him as an incarnation of love. But at the same time, Sri Ramakrishna's guru, Bhairavi Brahman, used to look upon Sri Ramakrishna as a combination of Chaitanya and Nityananda, two in one. She had several visions also verifying that one. In fact, Sri Ramakrishna himself had a vision of this Chaitanya and his brother means spiritual brother, Nityananda, in a way disciple also. as entering into his body as a mystical figures. So this Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he understood his mission in life, and by the time he became one of the maddest lovers of Krishna, he wanted to renounce the world. Later on he said, "I am born to be a sannyasi. Only a sannyasi can teach others." He was in fact married twice. And I think I narrated the story of his wife Vishnupriya. So this Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, so mother was a widow, Shichi Devi. In fact, his elder brother, Vishwambar, had also become a sannyasin and never again seen. But Shichi Devi was naturally tremendously attached. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nimai, he went and said, "Mother, I want to become a monk." And she broke down and said, "I will not allow you, my son. How can I bear both my sons becoming sannyasi?" Then he said, "Mother, this is my duty allotted by God to me. There is no way for me. I cannot live a householder's life. If you insist upon it, I am going to die. Give me permission. But I will promise you, I will be living near you. You will come and visit me every year, several months. And if you don't give permission, I have no option but to disappear from your sight." But he only upon obtaining his mother's permission, he left. But he started staying at Puri, so that from Shichi Devi's Navadvipa, it was not so difficult to travel to Puri. Every year she used to come, so long as she was capable of doing it. His devotion to his mother, he would not allow any woman to touch him. On the contrary, only Shachi Devi, his own mother, could serve him food, and he would fall at her feet, even though he was also a sannyasi. He also belonged to Shankaracharya's Dashanami Sampradaya, so Keshavatirtha. That was the guru of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Such was his devotion to his own mother. Then we see this Namdeva, how much he was devoted to his own parents. But then he also say Ramana Maharshi. Ramana Maharshi did not want any woman to stay there. But when his mother came, he had no words. And she started establishing a big household. He warned her, but who would listen? But what can he do? And at the end, when she passed away, he shed tears. Before her passing away, Ramana Maharshi took her head on his lap, put his one hand on her head, another hand on her heart, and then until she attained mukti, he did not leave her. That's what Shankaracharya had done. When his mother remembered him, he went there, gave mukti to her, and then came. What a marvelous examples. And finally, I am going to tell about Bhakta Pundalika. We all know the story. I am sure most of you know, but I will tell you very briefly. This Bhakta Pundalika was a son of a Brahmana parents. He was very devoted. And then the parents, as usual, got him married, and his wife became a little bit difficult person, and she went on changing her husband's mind, and he became completely, as the story goes, and as we know, Hindu tales cannot always be verified. But anyway, he turned to be absolutely uncaring of his parents, and then a big change had come. Later on, he became blind, and somebody told him, "You have neglected serving your parents. The only way is that you serve your parents. And that is the way to progress in spiritual life." Finally, in the Karma Yoga itself, Swami Vivekananda gives the story of the virtuous butcher from Mahabharata. How did he become such a great soul? Only by serving his parents. So all these wonderful stories are not meant for entertainment, but the highest truths are inculcated through these stories. Now, what I wanted to emphasize here is, what is the psychology in spiritual life of serving one's parents, Pitru Rina? One can never get rid of one's debts to one's own parents. Of course, as I was mentioning, parents also have the greatest responsibility, not only to provide the children with nice food, nice facilities, nice education, nice dress, and spending crores of rupees on their marriages wherever they could. That is not the only one. But the most important thing is imparting our spiritual culture by living the life themselves. If any parent, however loving they are, however caring they are, if they fail in giving spiritual culture, but only give them physical things or even intellectual things, they are failing thoroughly in their duties. Naturally, a question that comes is, so what happens if the children have not got good samskaras? That is none of our business. Our business is to lead ourselves what we preach, and then tell the children or anybody who would like to listen, not to people who we should never force these teachings to on other people, but especially we have our duty towards our own children, because we should be examples, living examples. They learn more in life from observing us than from hearing what comes from our mouths. So, we have dealt with very important part of one's duties. What is the overall picture? Spiritual progress is possible only in human life. And human life progresses in through varna stages and life stage, jati dharma and varna dharma, ashrama dharma. Jati dharma means, depending upon the qualities, we may be born as shudras or vaishyas or kshatriyas or brahmanas. This is nothing to do with ordinary understanding. One of the qualities, if tamas is dominates, it is shudra. It is a bit less, rajas is more, vaishya. Rajas is more, sattva is more than other two qualities, it's called kshatriya. More sattva guna, supported of course by rajoguna and tamoguna, is called brahmana. We have to appreciate how our ancient rishis have studied psychology so much, could penetrate and then divide people into these categories. Later on, the evil of categorizing these four castes by birth has come, but Bhagavan Krishna beautifully clarifies and says, guna karma vibhagayo chaturvarnyam maya srishtam guna karma vibhagayo, by the dominant guna as well as the type of activities we choose. We can choose certain type of activities, and there is a limited freedom there. Not complete freedom, but limited freedom. In that limited freedom, if we can choose something which will slowly take us to higher guna, then that is our duty to do it. Anyway, progress, whether for prayas or srayas, for worldly happiness or spiritual progress, both are possible only by using this opportunity given us through this body and mind and in this world, by discharging our duties. And this is an important point we must always keep in mind. There is nothing called only I sit and I pray. That is possible only when a person has reached the highest quantity of sattva guna, which in other words is a sannyasi. But until we reach that state, we have to develop this sattva guna and reduce rajoguna and tamoguna. And this is called spiritual progress. And this is possible only by the proper discharge of our respective duties. So now, Swami Vivekananda briefly tells, even so is a householder's duty to his wife. Always let us keep If this is the husband's duty towards the wife, it is also the wife's duty towards the husband. As I mentioned earlier, why did Sri Ramakrishna marry? Most people marry because they suffer from kama. It's a very common thing, like animals. When we get certain age, chemical factory starts production of this. That is nature's arrangement. Most people marry for several reasons. One reason is, of course, main reason, the biological urge to propagate oneself. But the another reason is, man wants a constant companion so long as this life lasts. Most people cannot bear loneliness. And that's one reason most people get married. Of course, in those earlier days, people were much more having faith in scriptures and religion. So they used to adjust, love each other. Now, looking upon this modern civilization, whose only goal seems to be sense pleasure as possible. This is the only goal of life. This is the impact of the modern Western civilization rather than our ancient civilization. Even in the West also, the ancient times, they had these high ideals. For example, in Bible, that divorce is never allowed because marriages are made in heaven. And that is not a superstitious idea. The psychology behind it is that through this, both of you become co-pilgrims and wend your way to God. That was the main thrust of that teaching. Let me read now from Swamiji's selection from Mahanirvana Tantra. No man should scold his wife, and he must always maintain her as if she were his own mother. And even when he is in the greatest difficulties and troubles, he must never show anger to his wife. And this is what, let us keep this teaching in mind and look at Sri Ramakrishna's life and Holy Mother's life. You will see what we are talking about. Sri Ramakrishna never looked down, insulted, because insulting can be done, suffering can be given, not even by opening the mouth, by looking down. That's what usually most people used to do in the Middle Ages, etc. Whatever be the husband, the wife must be a chaste wife. And these rascals, some of these Dharma Shastra Kartas, they have killed millions of women all in the name of religion. They made slaves of these women. Whether it is in India, in the West, a woman is looked upon as a desirable object of sense pleasure, never in the sense of a very valuable human being created by God for the purpose of progress in spiritual life. Hindu Dharma Shastra tells us a jiva is born as a woman, not because of some papa done by her, but because a woman's body is most suitable for the expression of certain type of devotion to God. For example, why did Sri Rama ask rishis in the Dandakaranya, next incarnation I will be born as Krishna and all of you will take birth as women, not for the pleasure of Krishna, not for this, because he could look down upon them or boss over them, because the highest expression of parabhakti in the attitude of the lover and the beloved is possible only in a woman's body. Biologically, it is the most suitable body. Another way I can express it is that I prefer my mother to my father. However loving my father would have been, but the incomparable love that any mother can give to her child, that cannot never be compared to anybody's love. Next to God's love, Swami Vivekananda used to say, the greatest we find is the love of the mother for her child. Even today, in these wretched days that we are living in, this fact remains ever shining. Every mother, when she looks at her children, she is a transformed woman. She becomes like a devi. But these Dharma Shastra Kartas, they have murdered people. You may be thinking, what is this Swami talking about? I am referring only to one particular custom, Sati. How many thousands of women had to burn themselves upon the pyre of their husbands, however wretched rascals the husband might have been. And it is all created. All pandits, they have risen and supported it. Even Pandit Raghunath, who had written this Dharma Shastra, he quotes learned quotations from earlier scriptures supporting this sati, the act of burning oneself. Wherein in the Vedas do we ever get these things? Only Swami Vivekananda knew about it. And then he felt so much misery, said, unless the masses and the women are risen up, it is not possible for India to rise at all. Where women are neglected, it is there in our Manu Smriti, where women are neglected, disrespected, the gods will be displeased with them. And these people will go to the direst hell, suffering on earth and suffering after death also. But what did the men turn all these things into? This horrible history is very painful even to recollect. Now look at Sri Ramakrishna, the latest incarnation of God. Why did he marry? To show the adarsha grihastha jivan. He loved her, she loved him. And when she was in need, he supported her. When he was in need, she supported him. Both of them are complementary. Nobody is superior, nobody is inferior. This is beautifully told through that story of the virtuous butcher. A loving wife, serving her husband, had become spiritually much greater than Brahmana ascetic. These are the lessons our Mahabharata, Ramayana, they want to show us. Who dares to point out at Sita and say, she is in any way inferior to the Divine Mother? But very few people, everybody talks about only Rama, very few people talk about Sita. Very many people talk about Hanuman, the greatest character in the whole of Ramayana. Swami Vivekananda used to go into ecstasy and say that the ideal for the modern India is Hanuman. Why? He was a perfect combination of jnana, bhakti, karma and yoga, ever ready to do the bidding of his master and serving the world. And that's why he is called Chiranjeevi. That's why Swami Vivekananda recommends, worship Hanuman, take his name. In fact, once he referred, I was Hanuman in my past birth. That was what Swami Vivekananda said. I carried the message of Rama to the grieving Sita in Ravana. At that time, I had to cross the ocean by flying. But in this incarnation, by the grace of Rama, I comfortably crossed the ocean, Pacific Ocean, by traveling in the very ship produced by their very demons, Ravanasuras. That's what he said. Anyway, coming back, if we study the life of Sri Ramakrishna and Holy Mother exclusively from the viewpoint of how they lived an ideal husband and wife life, then we have a lot of points to get. Now, even more important point, I am showing it, even though it is to be discussed later on. Every wife, excepting for her husband, becomes a loving mother to the whole humanity. And that is why Sri Ramakrishna kept Holy Mother and said, I am leaving you behind for establishing Divine Motherhood. Divine Motherhood doesn't mean only Divine Mother will manifest Divine Motherhood. Every woman accepting her relationship with her husband must become a Divine Mother, not even an ordinary mother. That means, what is Divine Mother? Every mother naturally loves her own children, or at best even people belonging to her children's children and to her closer, her family's children, etc., etc. But only a divine being can love even a poor child, etc., etc. The most wonderful example, tears come to my eyes whenever I meditate upon this incident. There was a disciple of Sri Ramakrishna. His name was Swami Shivanandaji. He became the second president of the Ramakrishna order. And his parents didn't have a male child for a long time. And then they prayed to Lord Taraknath Shiva. And as a result, this boy was born. His name was, they named him after that Taraknath, Tarak. And then the father was a great Tantrika Sadhaka. He met Sri Ramakrishna several times. Sri Ramakrishna had bestowed his grace upon him also. Then this Taraknath's mother, she gave birth to this boy. And then what happened? That family was earning sufficient amount of money. And so they took, I do not know exactly, about 12 or 15 orphan boys. Now what is the speciality in this incident? The speciality was that Taraknath's mother never made the slightest distinction between her son Tarak and then the other orphan children. Whatever she used to cook, she used to serve, looking upon her own son as one of the orphan sons. And then the neighbors, the relatives, must immediately, it was a glaring fact, and they remarked, what is this? This is your own son. You are treating him exactly like the others, orphans. That means you should have looked down upon them, which is Ramakrishna later on turned into the greatest ideology of India. Shivagnane Jiva Seva. Not orphans, not poor people, not helpless people, but looking upon and rendering service upon everybody as Lord Shiva himself, Lord himself, God himself. And Taraknath's mother used to practice it. So her reply was, for me, every child is Lord Shiva only. They are all my children, though not born through my womb. And that was a matter of surprise, even ridicule to many of his relatives. Now I am telling, she has become a divine mother. Chandramani Devi had become a divine mother. And we know how Holy Mother had become a divine mother for everybody, not only to good people, even to sinful people also, how she gave shelter to everybody. She never looked down anybody, because Divine Mother cannot afford to look down upon anybody. She may be serving people, she may be helping them, she may be looking after them, but mentally looking down has never come to Holy Mother. Everyone is my own child. So Swami Vivekananda goes on, no man should scold his wife, and he must always maintain her as if she were his own mother. And even when he is in the greatest difficulties and troubles, he must not show anger to his wife. This particular teaching, he must always maintain her as if she were his own mother. And literally, Ramakrishna worshipped Holy Mother's feet. How did he look upon her? Once she asked, how do you look upon me? And she said, he said, he replied that the mother who is in the temple, Mother Kali, and the mother who gave me birth, I look upon you exactly as the same mother. Ma, Anandamayi, Ma, Anandamayi. Then Swamiji goes on, he who thinks of another woman besides his wife, if he touches her even with his mind, that man goes to dark hell. And literally, these are all truths. Before women, he must not talk improper language, never brag of his powers. He must not say, I have done this and I have done that. The householder must always please his wife with money, clothes, love, faith, and words like nectar, and never do anything to disturb her. That man who has succeeded in getting the love of a chaste wife has succeeded in his religion and has all the virtues. Before we go further, I will stop here. But what was the reaction, judgment of Holy Mother Sharada Devi towards Ramakrishna? She gave an unqualified certificate. I am fortunate to have a husband who never even heard to me with flowers. And Sri Ramakrishna not only looked upon her in spiritual vision, of course, as the Divine Mother, but he never neglected her. He provided her with food. All his money he kept so that he knew after his passing away, this money will come for her maintenance. He gave explicit instructions where she should stay and what should be her attitude towards life and what was her duty allotted by the Divine Mother in this life, that is to establish the Divine Motherhood. And this is what we are talking. The end result of every duty properly discharged is Divine Fatherhood, Divine Motherhood, Divine Brotherhood, Divine Sisterhood, in other words, slowly transforming our mind so that it becomes pure consciousness. And that which is pure consciousness will only perceive pure consciousness everywhere. So this is the beautiful thoughts, ideals presented to us in Ramayana, in Mahabharata, in Srimad Bhagavatam, and they are nothing but the highest Upanishadic teachings given to us in the form of very sweet, swallowable homeopathy pills, in the form of stories, allegories, parables, etc. These beautiful topics we will discuss with. Every time I have to tell you that I will be reinforcing these talks with a lot of incidents or stories like that. So you just, if you have never heard, please go through the story of Bhakta Pundalika. Because of him, only the modern Pandarpura had come into existence, giving peace, solace, and right guidance for millions of devotees in India and, of course, some people in the West also. Om Jananim Sharadam Devim Ramakrishnam Jagadgurum Padapadme Tayo Sritva Pranamami Mohur Mohu. May Sri Ramakrishna, Holy Mother, and Swami Vivekananda bless us all with bhakti.